University. If it's about school marketing and communications, you'll find it here. It's Insight Applied. And now, here's Brad and Scully.
Hello, school marketers, and welcome to SMC. If it's about school marketing and communications, we'll talk about it here. I'm Brad Entwistle, and this is episode 143 for Wednesday, 17 October 2018. Scully, is your voice there? Have you got over the cold?
The lurgy's gone. Spring is in the air. And yes, there's a downright spring in my step. Cloudless blue skies here in paradise.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And leaving the whole paradise question aside, because not all of us are in Perth to enjoy it with you, to news that you can use. And this one, a little bit different, Cindy Gallup on her six principles for new world business success. Now, for those of you who don't know, Cindy Gallup is a little bit controversial, but an ad industry legend, so to speak. Became famous at Bartle, Bogle and Hegarty, or BBH. Such a proper name for a British ad agency, don't you think, Scully? And has had one or two TED Talks go fairly viral as well. But putting it in short, this is a report on an interview with Cindy making some good points. And here they are. Communication through demonstration. Don't say it, be it and do it. Blue sky it. Ask what would our customer love to happen, or what would we love to happen. Trust. Nurturing higher talent requires higher trust. Shared values. So saying shared values plus shared action equals shared profit, both financial and social. Humanize data. Data is not stats and numbers. Data is people. And again, humanize. It's not about diversity. It's about humanity, empathy. You and your team reflecting the world as it is. Scully, what was your take on this? Because let's put it this way, it was a wide-ranging interview.
It must have been a rambling one. I reckon she just had the opportunity to just go off down any direction she felt like. But she's been around the block. She's lived to tell the tale. And therefore, she's an interesting, pretty dynamic and forthright opinion leader.
That's nice. So, opinion leader. In other circumstances, it could be someone who's opinionated.
Okay, I watered it down. But BBH used to be, when I was in London all those years ago, was the agency. They did this most amazing creative work, and it spawned masses of great people who've gone to all sorts of ad agencies from all over the place. It's been a spawning ground of immense talent. So hats off to her. One thing I did like, and it's basically saying we need to build that trust, but to build that trust into an organization, we need to really think differently. New world order, quote, new world order business demands a new world order structure. Completely rethink your systems and processes and redesign them around trust.
And I ask, why is that important for schools? Because it is so hard for schools.
Yeah. I mean, but it applies, you know, what's more important? She's talking about any number of brands. And you could be selling shoes or cars or whatever. You know, nothing is more important than our offspring. And therefore, the place that you entrust them, the school you send them, you have to have trust. There has to be an element on so many levels, not just on a duty of care, but just the moral values, all sorts of different things that you would expect within that organization. Therefore, put trust as a key platform within the structure and processes. So I really like the way she's thinking. She recommends rethinking your attitude towards your employees and your talent. Therefore, what she's saying, it's not just in marketing terms, but throughout the entire DNA of your organization, that trust is of vital importance.
But imagine trust even in fairly simple things like managing social media accounts. Are we going to trust parents and students to take over the social media accounts and run them? Now, I'm not saying you should, I'm not saying you shouldn't, but the challenge that she's making here is to completely rethink the systems and redesign them around trust. I think that's a good challenge, because we generally in schools, because of things like duty and care, immediately regress back to, if that's the right way to put it, step back to a place of let's have systems that are so tightly constructed that nobody can make a mistake. And in marketing terms, that's not necessarily the best place for creativity to spawn, as you put it.
Well, no, it's not. When you open up the trust, no, it's not. When you open up the flow of trust, you sort of, and this is her great quote, you unlock vast reserves of ideas and creativity and then contribution. Mm. So I like the way of thinking, and she's absolutely right.
Another little anecdote from her is that an agency some years ago said to her, Cindy, how can we be more creative? We want to raise the game in our creative world. How can we be more creative? And she said, it's really simple. Have less meetings. And then the comment, a back-to-back schedule is the enemy of creativity. And I'm sure every listener to SMC is nodding and knowing that the back-to-back meetings that can happen in school, no room for creativity, just room to process the next newsletter, the next ad, get it out there.
Yeah, another part of her anecdotal rambling, she talked about one, if you want people to open up, you have to open up to them. We have to be completely transparent. And I understand and I like that thought process, certainly within the world of marketing. And then she really smacks it between the eyes. Honestly, I can't stand the term brand storytelling. My least favorite word of all time is, wait for it, content. Please get back to us on your feeling of the word towards the word content.
She goes on to say she's a huge believer in radical simplicity. What she tries to do is to have people understand that brands and businesses, read schools in our case, need to operate on the same level as people because we are all people. And I've got to say, I read that, I underlined it, scratched in the margin, because that is the thing that we see missing a lot, is that we've got schools trying to be brands and be grown-ups, but really it's still about people. It's about the students, it's about the parents. And if we can not only reflect them, but help raise the bar for them, help lift them through content. There you go, said that word. Lift them through content and educating them, not just in the school sense, but educating them about learning and about life and all of the things that your school is there to do for students, then that's a great thing. That's, to me, is that radical simplicity of being people relevant, I suppose, is a way to put it.
Yep. So whether you're a brand, a company, or a person, your absolute starting point should be to look into yourself and go, who am I? What do I stand for? And what do I believe in? And I hope every school out there, every organization has had that navel-gazing time, but I'm pretty sure they haven't. But it's a good marketing exercise. I do get the feeling that this interview was probably over a bottle of red wine somewhere and it just sort of rambled on a bit. But there are some good lines in there, and that was one of them.
And we could ramble on indeed about the ramblings in the interview, but it was strangely compelling reading in the sense that you never knew what was going to happen in the next paragraph. And I think that's part of brand Cindy too, but really interesting reading and some real gems in there. One of them, I have to pull this one out for you, Scully, because she says, quote, it astounds me that all of the giant tech platforms that are the future of our industry, you know, brackets, Google, Facebook, and so on, have advertising properties that are essentially new world order versions of display advertising. The future is not ad units. She talks about a thing called ad products. It's gobsmacking that Facebook, with the best engineering talent in the entire world, its enormous resources, with huge reserves of cash flow, and again, still, what they sell to brands and agency is display ads on Facebook. What say you, Scully?
Brilliant. I love it. And she's right, you know. But the other side of that, the danger is if it's not overtly different, then it's advertorial or some other words, one of the many words, native content, all sorts of things that we've talked about, that's hidden advertising. So I think they've tried lots and reverted back just to go, we need to differentiate for credibility's sake.
And that's what, I mean, most of their money does come from agencies. So that's what the agencies want to spend their money on. They're going to these big social media platforms and saying, please take our money. And what are the rules? Her point is go and change the rules. Now, usually for schools, they haven't got that much power in the market, but certainly I love the idea.
Yeah.
One last quote I just wanted to pull out before we move on, Scully. It was almost a sideline. You mentioned that BBH was renowned for some of the great creativity, and certainly their television commercials, TVCs, over the years were just astounding. But this quote from her, our creative focus at BBH was, we didn't sell, we made people want to buy. And that just triggered for me How many times in schools do we see schools that are trying campaigns, trying to attract parents inquiring about their son or daughter coming to the school, and it's so much like they're trying to sell the school as opposed to, let's just make the school so attractive that people want to buy it. And that's a great quote. That to me is a quotable quote.
It certainly is. And actually, I'm going to hijack this conversation just for a millisecond. I just want to say RIP to an old mate of mine, Charlie Robertson, who was a director at BBH for many, many years. A suit with a creative heart. So RIP, my friend.
Sounds like a special man, a suit with a creative heart. And so to news item number two, how voice-activated tech will change content marketing. And this comes from Jody Harris, who is, this is one of those great titles again, Scully, Director of Editorial Content and Curation at the Content Marketing Institute. Again, you need double-sized business cards just to fit it in. But the point of the article is that as voice response technology is rapidly emerging from as a most disruptive force to hit the industry since the internet became a visual medium. Well, that's a big claim, but I can well believe it's true with numbers like this. 55% of adults will have a smart speaker by 2022. It's not that far away. 24% of respondents to a particular study would rather use a voice assistant than visit a website. Major shift in habits. 43% of companies already invest in technology to enable voice marketing, according to, that was a survey this year from DigiDay. Well, I mean, if you think that's huge, this data from Alpine, the 1 billion mark has already been passed for voice searches conducted each month. So each month, more than 1 billion voice searches are conducted. That's from Comscore, who also say that by 2020, half of all searches will be voice-based. So with that scary thought, Scully, does that mean for schools?
It is scary thought. It is. How do you even get your head around that? How do you get on the tip of Siri's tongue, so to speak? It's a challenge about how we think about our messaging, how we articulate what we're about, making it pithy, making it succinct, and making sure you know, importantly, what it is that people are looking for. And that, my friend, is the key. Much as it is in the written word, we're not writing about how good we are. We're writing about what it is our prospective customers, our audience, want to know about, not just necessarily about browbeating people. So it's really important to think this is coming, it's not happening yet. And as schools, it's going to be a challenge, but it's a wave that's coming. There are also, out of this, there's some actually really quirky products that are coming out of this. So how about this one? Furbo, a treat-tossing nanny cam that lets nervous pet parents check in on their fur kids via video. Now think about it, hang on. So you can check the cam and the power of the voice. It's able to flick out if the dog behaves. You can flick out a little treat to it from this machine, and your reassuring voice saying, "Oh, well done, good boy," or whatever it is, comes out. So there's a wonderful use of the human voice through technology. But
we'll call that one a fad, shall we?
On a more serious level, it's something we just need to think about, how it might affect our marketing. Now, we know that schools are not really school marketers, but much because of time and budget as anything, are not early adopters of some of the technological advances.
Well, that came out in our own survey, the School Marketing and Social Media Survey. I mean, slightly different questions. We were talking about social media, but 3% were happy to adopt a new social media platform as soon as it arrived, but 76% were of the wait and see categories. So it tends to suggest that a voice activated search isn't a new social media platform, but it is new tech.
Yeah, it is. And it's just something to be aware of and thinking about the importance of the spoken word as well as the written word.
And in the conclusion to this article, I won't go through the whole list of questions, but Jody says, to determine your brand's voice friendliness, ask yourself a few key questions. If you want to know what those questions are, and they're quite detailed and they're quite deep, go to the show notes, click on the link, have a read of the article. But this is the conclusion, Scully. If the answer is no, or you aren't even sure how to answer the questions, which I suspect most schools will be in that category, the conclusion is you might be better off waiting for this technology's marketing opportunities to become clearer before adding your voice to the conversation. I mean, do you like the voice pun? No, I don't. But really, that is the conclusion. This is something that's out there. It's becoming big and trendy, but it's not yet settled about how this is best to be used. So it can be expensive. Let me rephrase that. It is expensive to actually rejig a lot of your content beyond just making sure that you've got short answers to things like FAQs. Moving straight on to even something a little bit deeper. Why is behavioral economics so popular? This is Professor David Gall, who's from the University of Illinois at Chicago and comes from the New York Times. Behavioral economics seems to have captured the popular imagination. Deep article. The field's being described by Richard Thaler, one of its founders, as economics done with a strong injection of good psychology. Some of the proponents view it as a way to make economics more accurate by incorporating more realistic assumptions about humans behave. Now, on the other side, and this is Professor Gall's take on it, is that behavioral economics can be thought of as endorsing the outsized benefit of psychological tricks, in inverted commas, rather than calling for more fundamental behavioral or policy change. The popularity of such low-cost psychological interventions or, quote, nudges, under the label of behavioral economics is in part a triumph of marketing. It reflects the widespread perception that behavioral economics combines the cleverness and fun of pop psychology with the rigor and relevance of economics. Scully, why did this get a gig in his MC?
Because beware the next fad. This is a classic. Someone doing a marketing thesis somewhere trying to justify a hunch, I reckon. They try to justify a hunch. They thought economics, how do I merge them? Economics drives profit, and therefore they're wanting to put it within their theory. All they've done is take a little bit of behavioral analysis, merge it with some economics, and say, yes, the data that's driven as a result of behavior will radically improve everything, if you can get your head around the human behavior and economics, that is. So what does come out of this, only if we understand why a behavior occurs, can we create generalizable knowledge and the goal of science. The idea of loss aversion has focused on framing messages in terms of loss. You will lose out by not buying our product. You know what? It turns out no one really cares about that anyway. Maybe that affects 2% in the way you're messaging it. So I think this is interesting because it's quite intellectual. But it also, I think, the tricks of the trade, this classic nudge, this behavioral aversion has been used to justify some pretty hard-hitting marketing or advertising tactics, has demonstrated it doesn't really work. We've got a pretty media-savvy, clever public out there. So be cynical about the next big thing and trust your own judgment.
Indeed. I mean, I took out of this, I wrote the words at the bottom of the article, silver bullet, meaning everybody's looking for the silver bullet. In fact, just on the weekend, I was in at one of the big major bookstores in town. I always have a look on the business shelves because that's where I hang out. And the number of books with titles of, you know, life hacks, marketing hacks, everybody's looking for this hack, the silver bullet, to do things better. And that's, I think, where a lot of this comes from. You know, you get a better response if you use this hack. Talk about loss aversion. And he's found statistically that it doesn't exist. It's just a myth.
This is SMC. It's insight applied.
And now to our sponsor, who is, as you will know, if you're a regular listener, is the School Marketing Institute, or SMI. But rather than hear us rabbit on about it, you can listen to Kerr Fulton Peebles, who is principal of Esperance Anglican Community School.
I think we decided to become an SMI member because I recognised that in our marketing efforts, what we were not doing was coordinating all of the different elements of it. And SMI, to my mind, combined all of those elements in a cohesive and integrated way, which was very appealing. It provides a whole range of opportunities within the package, which we would otherwise have not been able to have accessed or only done so at a significant cost. So it's a very, I think, affordable package. It certainly is appealing from that point of view. It provides a framework in which I can work, and it's not just a case of me selecting at random ideas which fly across the desk and think, oh, that might be quite good. this puts it all together in a manageable way, which I think will provide a much more focused and, I hope, effective platform to do it all from. As head of the school, obviously, time is at a premium. And in a small school, I'm combining that with a marketing role. SMI provides a framework for me to work from. And as a consequence, I think it will enable me to be much more efficient in the use of my time.
If you'd like to learn more, visit image7.com.au/SMI.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And right about this time on SMC, we normally bring in one of the team to talk about an aspect of marketing, and this one prompted by the simple fact that data from our very own School Marketing and Social Media Survey 2018 told us that 30% of school marketers are uncertain, unsure, or definitely don't have a mobile-optimized website. Scully?
That statistic worried me.
Scary.
It is. So instead of actually doing anything about it, I asked Christian about it because he knows all about how to remedy that situation. So here he is, Christian Lawrence, a man who has optimized more websites than any white man alive. And he's going to tell us all about it. So first of all, hello.
Hello.
What is mobile optimization?
Well, it's basically about ensuring that the user experience of your website is optimized for mobile devices such as phones and tablets while remaining usable on the desktop as well. In the past, that meant updating your website just so that it would work on mobile devices. But nowadays, it's something you really have to consider from the very beginning.
Okay. So what if you didn't? And if your website isn't mobile ready?
Well, if your website isn't already optimized for mobile devices, then you should really consider getting a new website rather than trying to update an existing website. You'll get a much better and much nicer, more considered design by weaving it into the build process.
That is the gold, I think, for the day. All right, so you're building a new website. What should you consider in terms of this optimization thingy?
I guess quickly, there are just a couple of main things. Firstly, simplify your sitemap. So with the invention of mobile devices, people are used to scrolling and they expect it. Above the fold, as we've all heard, it is not as important as it used to be. Better to have sort of slightly longer pages with multiple sections rather than more and more pages that people can get lost down the rabbit hole. And next is design for fingers, not just a mouse. So buttons that work fine on desktop can be really difficult and infuriating to press with your finger on mobile. So make everything a little bit bigger, a little bit spaced out on mobiles.
Fat finger syndrome. Yes, yes. Indeed. Well, thank you, Christian. There'll be more, I hope, to ask you in time, but thanks for your time.
Thank you.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
Now, Scully, I'm not sure if you noticed, but it's time for the marketing example. And the marketing example, it's clear. Instagram crashed worldwide for about 30 minutes and Twitter took off.
It did. Good on them. And this is the reason I want to talk about this is an opportunity taken by some brands, lots of individuals, to really take the mickey out of Instagram for crashing, or out of anyone that's into Instagram for that matter, or social media. And so for a school, it's not always easy to be nimble and creative. But look at Queensland Police Service. Oh, I would say they are not necessarily renowned for their creativity, but they posted on Twitter, Instagram being down is not a police matter. You can post photos of food again soon enough. And that's from the Queensland Police Service. Fantastic. There's heaps of other examples, a lot of them involving cats, within the show notes. I urge you to have a look. They're very, very funny. And there's one by an old mate, colleague of mine, Simon Tabrink from Gramercy Park, who posted a really, really hilarious picture of a massive crowd saying, influencers returning to real jobs because Instagram's down. Ho, ho, ho. Clever. Now, why couldn't a school, I don't know what it may be, you wouldn't call it guerrilla marketing, but you'd call it opportunistic. So be nimble, have a sense of humor, because it can work. Your audience, your parents, your community would value and respect you all the more for it.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And now it's time for our Rants and Rave, where we hand out a brick bat or a bouquet to somebody. And I'm afraid this time it's time for a brick bat. And I know that because the story is all about Google Plus shutting down essentially after a really bad failure to disclose a data breach. The Wall Street Journal revealed that Google had covered up a data leak affecting 500,000 user accounts, 500,000 in something that is strikingly familiar to Facebook's Cambridge Analytica data breach, but Google chose not to disclose it. Somebody else had to find it out and break the news. Then Google announced that Google Plus was to be shut down in a blog post soon after the Wall Street Journal article was published. Scully, what does that do for everybody's trust in the mega platforms?
If my ranting off on soapboxes hasn't got enough about having some concerns about the power of the big boys, then this hopefully will make people prick up their ears. They actually said that the likely disclosure in us coming into the spotlight alongside or even instead of Facebook, despite having stayed under the radar throughout Cambridge Analytica, it's completely cynical. They've actually admitted that they didn't want to come. They didn't want to sort of let Facebook off the hook, even though we'd done something just as bad. They're all as bad as each other. They're a very useful tool, very useful product, apart from Google Plus, which has died the death of 1,000, if not 1,000,000 cuts. So just be careful. So the leak, yeah, it affected hundreds of thousands of accounts.
At the time when they said that the leak potentially affected 500,000 accounts and up to 438 different third-party applications may have had access to private information, admits the blog, this is how they announced it on a blog, by Google Vice President of Engineering Ben Smith. Ben Smith, the lamb sent to the slaughter, the Vice President of Engineering. Who sends out the Vice President of Engineering to talk about a major breach of trust?
The fall guy. Yeah. So look, Google Plus is gone. There won't be too many tears shed here, but it's the fact there's more data breach, there's more or distinct lack of respect for the world and our rights. And so just watch out. Google's great. Facebook does a job, but just be careful.
Really quickly, while we've been talking, I quickly referred back to the School Marketing and Social Media Survey 2018. The link is in the show notes. Make sure you get your own copy. But for schools, 1% of our respondents said it was the most important platform to them. 14% use it. So, you know, it's big enough to care about, but not big enough really to cause a major impact in schools. Google Plus will wind down over a 10-month period.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And that almost brings us to the end of episode 143 of SMC. Now, if you're listening from the Image 7 website, pop over now to your favourite podcast player for your fortnightly dose of school marketing and communications goodness delivered straight into your own device. Search for SMC, School Marketing and Communications, and you'll find us there. Now, if you've got any questions, comments, marketing examples, or a rant or rave of your own, email us, smc@image7.com.au. And that is it. We're done for this episode of SMC. From Scully and myself, Brad Entwistle. Bye for now.
Goodbye.